18 past 10 on this Monday edition of Winners. Let's commence our review of the program of racing at Caulfield on the weekend. And joining us from the trial files is Matt Welsh. How are you, Matt?
I'm very well, Nadia. How are you?
Yeah, very well. What did you make of the weekend's racing?
Yeah, fascinating day. We looked the track race perfectly, but the times are interesting. They were considerably slower than the same good three surface that we had a couple of weeks ago, or just a week ago. They were noticeably slower. There was a northerly wind down the side straight, which is the predominant straight they race out of, particularly from the sprint start. So that no doubt had an impact. But yeah, the times are really interesting. And how we treat this meeting going forward, you know, I think it needs to be treated with a little bit of caution, because those slowly run races meant there were bunch fields coming around the home bend, and particularly in the Ore Stakes, we saw a number of horses have very little luck in the straight.
It's a very good point you do bring up about the times, and as what you said, like, you know, we can work off of how tracks raced at other meetings. Of course, we had the upgrade after race number four from the good four to the three. The wind obviously was some contributing factor, but as what you mentioned, as a whole though, they obviously were slower than normally run races on that type of track condition. There are factors, but they were very oddly run.
Yeah, look, if you draw a line through Manalo Blahnik's 1400 metre win, which was the last of the day at Caulfield the week before, he would have won the Ore Stakes by about 19 lengths on a same good three-rated track. So what I take out of Saturday is that it was probably closer to the good four end of the range, whereas the week prior and probably most of January we've been racing closer to the good two end. And then you had the mitigating factor of the wind just further compound that. You had that northerly wind that particularly races 6, 7 and to a lesser degree race 8 really had an impact down that side straight.
Well, let's find out how punters fared with the Tabs' Nick Quinn. How are you, Nick?
Very well, thank you, Nadia.
Was it a winning weekend for punters?
It was a bit of an arm wrestle. There were some well-back favourites that did get the job done, but unfortunately there were a couple of banana skin results throughout the course of the day, and anyone that did the quaddie did very, very well for themselves.
All right, well, let's have a look at race number one. This was the 1800-metre race. It ended up being won by Kootalyn. What were the betting fluctuations in this, Nick?
Yeah, Kootalyn was a bit of a tough way for punters to start the day, because she had been 4.20 and to 4.40 over the course of Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then on race day drifted from 4.40 out to $6. It was really good support for Downhearted over the last couple of days, who opened at 4.40, got as low as 3.60, did drift late to start 4.40, but was the best back runner. Gallic Chieftain, the initial favourite, started at 4.60 and walked home nicely for third. It was also moved at longer odds for Self Sense and Goldstream. Self Sense was 19 into as low as 8 before starting at 10, and Goldstream firmed from $19 into 8. So unfortunately, Kootalyn, not a good way to start the day.
By the sounds of it. Look, how did they run this race along, Matt?
Yeah, they went at a reasonable clip the first few hundred metres, and Downhearted took up the running. And then from the 1,200 to the 1,000, they really started to drop anchor. They went 12.68 seconds for that split. And then that further compounded from the 1,000 to the 800, where they slowed to 13.16 seconds. And, you know, Downhearted had control of the race before that point, and, you know, that was the signal for the mighty J-Rod to take up the running, inject a little speed into it. And then from the 800 to the 600, they went 11.86 seconds when the mighty J-Rod took control. So that was, for mine, a negative for Downhearted. I think if they had kept rolling at just a reasonable clip, he probably wins the race. I think his advantage has been thrown away there. He's done a good job to hang on and just be narrowly beaten, I think, because he was left in front a long way out in the straight. The clear run of the race for mine was Gallic Chieftain. He was resuming. He's on a Sydney Cup campaign. That mid-race slowdown there certainly didn't help his chances, and I thought he's the one horse we can follow going forward from race one. Kootalyn did a good job to win. This is his sort of grade. He got things to suit, and, you know, he'd been racing quite well at Caulfield in similar sort of races as Plot the Course, who was probably a touch disappointing. But, yeah, Kootalyn got the job done. I think Downhearted probably wins if he holds the front early. But, again, you know, he's just sort of around this grade. I think Gallic Chieftain's the one we want to follow going forward, Nadia.
OK, so Gallic Chieftain, the one to put in our black book out of race number one. We now get into the two-year-old races. First of all, these preludes of the Blue Diamond. The first division was for the fillies, and what happened here with the betting, Nick?
Two very costly fillies there becoming in Hoohood and Pure Elation. Both were the runners that attracted some good support throughout the course of the week, which did continue on race day, including bets of 3,000 at 3.20 on Hoohood, and 2,000 late at the 390. She was $4 into as low as 3 before getting back out to $4 late. And it was a similar story for Pure Relation, who attracted bets of 2,000 at 750 and 4,900 at the 650. There was a little bit of each way support for the winner, Enbahar, who was $15 into 10 and the fourth best back runner in the race. Overall, Lake District Girl at $19 in from 21 was speculating betting as well, but not the best result for punters. Race 2 on the program either.
Well, let's talk a bit about the speed in this race. There looked to be a couple of unlucky horses too, Matt, and the likes of Seabrook, and then we had Uhud, who made up very good ground late, but Seabrook never really got a crack at them.
No, she certainly didn't, and she was coasting as they came around the home bend. She ran very good splits to the sort of 300-metre mark and then got chopped out and had to change course, and her run was excellent. She looked really good in her action. I think she's got plenty of scope to improve heading into the Blue Diamond. I thought hers was probably the run of the race. Uhud, of course, played up in the barriers, had to be removed from the stalls, vetted, which is never good. And again, she was slowly out. And she really needs to sort out her manners in the barriers if she's going to win a Blue Diamond. You probably can't afford to do that wrong out of the that much wrong out of the stalls. She's done that on three occasions now, and all three occasions she's been unlucky in being beaten, but she has been beaten, and I think that'll be the case again in the Blue Diamond if they can't get that those barrier manners sorted out. It was interesting, Quinny, that market support continued to come for Pure Relation, because as soon as they announced they were going to take a sit on her, she was a runner that, you know, I was quite upset I was on, to be honest. She over-raced badly when they restrained her. She jumped very well. She got pulled back to the tail of the field and over-raced badly, and I think they've got a bit of work to do with Pure Relation. She's clearly a really talented filly, but she just does too much wrong in the run. And I think at this stage of her career, from a punting perspective, she probably needs to be allowed to let run early and try and travel a bit better. Obviously, from a stable perspective and a training perspective, the Snowdens are thinking about the long-term and trying to get her to settle. So I can understand what they're trying to do. But I think just from a here and now perspective, point of view, she needs to be up on speed. So I would completely forgive her run. She finished 2.9 lengths off them and was okay. Lake District Girl's done a really good job here for mine. They went reasonably quickly early. She was setting the tempo. The wind admittedly wasn't as strong at race two as it was later in the day, but she's held on and only been beaten less than a length. And I think it was, you know, a very, very good run and up on speed in a Blue Diamond. I don't think she's going to have any issue with the 1,200 metres. So if she gets a run in the Blue Diamond, I think she's a sneaky chance at big odds. They're probably the key ones to mention. There was a protest here, Seabrook against Lake District Girl, fourth, first, third, which was upheld. Interesting also, another runner that was very well backed at different stages in betting was Al Nafer, and she never looked a chance. She was off the bit a long way out and was very disappointing in last place.
We go to the Colts and Geldings division now, race number 3 of the Blue Diamond Prelude. This was a very open race. Nick, what was the support for?
Yeah, look, it was an open race, there's no doubt about that, but there was good late money for the winner in Brits Buy, who was $9.50 on Saturday morning and backed into $6, and despite the fact covered a bit of ground in the run, was too good over the 1,100 metres and landed some good bets along the way. Plaguestone was a bit of a betting drifter on race day, but once he got out to $5, there was some money for him, and he trimmed back into $4.80, including bets of $15,000 at the $4.80. Well, High Ratio was a big firmer throughout the course of the week and did get as low as $4.40 before starting at $5 and was a $9 chance when markets opened. One bet there of $2,000 each way at the $4.80 on High Ratio. But overall, ridden by a pretty popular winner in race 3 on the program.
And I became a wide draw as well. What did you take out of this race, Matt?
Yeah, it was a little bit stronger than the fillies. I think they ran quicker time. They were 65.06 for the Colts and Geldings versus 65.32 for the fillies. The race looked a bit stronger on paper heading in as well, I felt. Lovely ride by Jordan Childs. Just summed it up beautifully on ridden by from the wide gate. He put this colt in the race early and then just eased him behind the speed. He was still covering a little bit of ground, but just had his horse in a lovely rhythm and settling just off what was a pretty strong tempo early. He peeled out off their backs coming around the home bend, and he was simply too good. And really strong performance. I don't think the 1,200 metres in 2 weeks' time is going to stop this colt at all. He backed up from a trial on Monday to race on Saturday, which is a sign that he's really thriving in his work. He's still got a good fitness base from when he raced in December, won that debut on a heavy track. So I think all signs point to him being a leading contender in the Blue Diamond. Plaguestone sat four wide from barrier four, which was a bit unusual, covered plenty of ground. His effort was probably every bit as good as the winner. He showed that he's really come on from that debut run when he was a short price beaten favourite up in Sydney. And he too looks a very strong chance heading into the Blue Diamond. So these two are probably the top two picks for mine in 2 weeks' time. Native Soldier did a good job to get into third. Seberate was hitting the line really strongly, but I think a few of these that hit the line strongly might have been a little bit flattered because they did go hard early and those leaders were really tiring late. So I think the first two were clearly the best. I think Seberate will be really good when he gets up to 1,400 metres and even further potentially. And debutant here, Titan Blinders from the Leon and Troy Corston's yard, was badly held up coming around the home bend, had to duck and weave in the straight, and I thought did a really good job to finish sixth. Was making very good ground on the line. So I think there's a win in him soon. High Ratio was very well back, Quinny, as Quinny mentioned, and I was keen on his chances. And he pulled a bit early, settled into a good rhythm from that point on, and was quite disappointing in the straight. So not sure what to make of High Ratio, except for the fact that he, on face value, he was very disappointing.
How do you sort of line up the two-year-olds at the moment, Matt? We've obviously had these preludes and we saw the previews a couple of weeks ago. What are you making of the two-year-old crop?
Yeah, at this stage, I think Written By and Plaguestone are the two to beat. I think the interesting runner is Ennis Hill because she's put the time on the board, but it was only over 1,000 metres. I think if she can run out a strong 1,200, then she's going to be very hard to run down. But what we know is it's a very open year. Barriers are going to play a part. You know, a horse like Uhud still has a lot to come in terms of its barrier manners. Will she be right on the day? Can she jump with the field and settle a couple of lengths closer to allow her to be more effective over the concluding stages? So the reality is it's a very open year. If there was a horse to come down from Sydney, one that we aren't expecting to come down, it wouldn't surprise me if they were able to blow this lot away. But very even bunch, and I think Written By and Plaguestone are probably the two from this weekend that you know, going to be the hardest to beat in 2 weeks' time.
And Nick, how is the futures market looking with the tab for the Blue Diamond?
Look, it's very open, that is for sure. Written By was the firmer on the back of that impressive victory on Saturday. It was a $17 chance on Saturday morning and has subsequently firmed to be one of the runners prominent in the betting now at $8.50. Kiki Boom heads the betting at $7. That's appealed to one punter who's parted with $5,000 on it. That quote, Plaguestone $7.50, Longleaf $8.50, and one punter sticking fat with Uhud passing with $1,000 last night at the $8.50.
There's the market for the Blue Diamond with tab.com.au. Let's have a look at race number four now. This was the Carline Cup at Group 3 level over 1,600 metres. Nick, what happened here with betting?
Well, what do they say? The better the price, the more you have on. And that's exactly what punters did with the winner, Galo Shop, who was 225 in the even money on Saturday morning. But it subsequently drifted all the way out to 250 by race time. And fortunately, plenty of punters did cash in late with bets of 3,000 at 250, 2,200 at 230. And was one of the better back runners through multi-bets on the program and fortunately did the right thing. Harlem and Lord Fandango filled the placings at $4.20 and $9 respectively. Both of them did attract a little bit of late support. The late drifter was Windspell, who eased from $4.20 out to $5.50 before running home into fourth. But Galo Shop, very impressive and looks set for a good campaign.
What did you make of the performance of Galo Shop and the position he got in running here, Matt?
Yeah, Nardi, he got into a lovely spot outside the leader, who was Master Reset, and they really dropped anchor. As soon as they got into formation here, it was a lovely little kickoff run for Galo Shop. He didn't have to do a huge amount of work. The wind wasn't a massive factor at this stage of the race, and he was just far too strong late. And most of that was owing to how easy a run he had in the early stages. So I think it's, as I said, a beautiful kickoff point to his campaign. I assume he's going to head to the Australia Cup in a few weeks' time, and he'll be very hard to beat there. I don't think there's a huge amount to take from the race going forward. Windspill was pretty plain, I thought, to be honest, and that was on the back of just a fair first-up run in the race behind Chahitzi. I think has a bit more to come. Harlem had the perfect run and was okay getting into second, but yeah, I think we can follow Galo Shop going forward because he does look back in good order. He had trialled well leading into this, and he's just had a very soft win first up, so that should bring him on fitness-wise, and wherever he goes next, he's going to be hard to beat.
We look at race five now. This was the three-year-old fillies Group 3 event over 1,200 metres where we had a heck of a lot of very good girls resuming from spells. But the money, well, it was seemed to be with Scholes here, Nick.
It was with Scholes, it was also with Booker, and also with Tulip. They were the three market leaders, and they were the three that punters primarily did work around. Unfortunately, Booker was too good. Matt Stewart said he'd have my life on Booker running a place. Well, she went even better than that. Bets along the way included 2,000 at 460, 2,000 at 460, and 3,000 at 4. Scholes, on the other hand, did jump the clear favourite, was 380 down to 340 late, and then late support saw a firm again into 280. Well, Tulip was the early market mover and then lurked around that $4 mark after opening at $4.60. So they were the three that punters did focus in on. And fortunately, Booker was one of the runners that was successful.
And she's just got that natural tactical speed, Matt. I know that the stable, they didn't actually think she may needed to lead on the occasion, but she just got pretty much left there, and she was always had that bit of a kick about her.
Yeah, she was just left there in front, Nadia. They haven't broken any records early here, especially for this class of horse, and she just went along at a lovely tempo in front. It was noticeable as they came around the home bend, there was probably two lengths covering first to last. The field was packed up and it was just a bit of a dash home, and she was too good. I think it was a really good win from Booker. She probably should have beaten Merchant Navy first up at the same track last campaign when covering a lot of ground, and she's atoned for it first up on Saturday. She trialled really well leading into the campaign, and I think she's got a good couple of weeks ahead of her. It's interesting, though, that they're going, I think, to the Oakley Plate moving forward, which is 1,200 metres back to 1,100. I thought the way she ran this race, the times would suggest that she'd be better suited up to 1,400 and then even again to 1,600. So I'm not certain, convinced that necessarily the Oakley Plate's her race in a few weeks' time, but it was a very good win. Her stablemate, Smart Coupe, missed the start quite badly with Craig Williams in the saddle. I saw a little video on Saturday where she was just playing up a touch and then just wouldn't get going as the gates open. And she probably lost three or four lengths there at the start of the race. She did a really good job to rattle home into about sixth place, and I thought her run was excellent. Leather and Lace, really good from the back of the field. Good return from her. See Me Exceed was held up a bit on the inside, but did have the protection from the wind with that inside barrier. Did okay to run into third. The disappointing runner, though, was Scholes. She was definitely the best-backed runner late. She was the one the big teams wanted to be on. She never looked like winning. She got a nice run in behind the speed, and Mark Zara was getting to work on her very early. She dropped out, you know, probably 200 metres from home, and she had trialled just fairly leading into this run. So my thought would be that fitness-wise, she'll gain a lot of benefit from the outing, but I think she's going to need another one at 1,400 metres before we start considering her a winning chance. Once she gets up to probably the mile is where can probably start considering her a winning chance. And Tulip was okay in fourth. She got on one rein down the straight, proved a little bit difficult to ride out at some point in time, but she was just fair. But look, I think Booker was well placed here. I'm not 100% convinced that going back to 1,100 metres next start is ideal, but she's clearly going well, and I think there's another win in Smart Coupe in the coming weeks if she jumps cleanly. It's not something she's done hugely in the past, missed the kick, so I think we can forgive that. And one other worth mentioning, pretty much touched on every runner in the race, but it was a quality race. I think Magnesium Rose doesn't really see out 1,200 for mine. She had to do a bit of work from the wide draw. She settled deep in the early stages, and I'd love to see her back to 1,100 or even 1,000 metres where she draws a gate, can control the tempo. I think there's a race in her in this sort of similar grade in the coming weeks as well. So good race moving forward, a number of quality fillies, and none more so than the winner, who was very professional.
She was very professional, and she's a real tough filly. At a 22-11, we are reviewing the action from Caulfield on Saturday with the Trial Files' Matt Welsh and also the Tab's Nick Quinn. And we're up to the first leg of the quaddie, which is race number 6, the Group 2 1,100-metre Rubiton Stakes. What was the market's moves in this race, Nick?
Earlier on in the week, all the money was for Ardrossan from the McPrice stable, but it did dry up on race day, and there was a late swing towards the winner, Super Cash, who trimmed up from 550 into 440. Bets along the way included 1,000 at 550, 1,500 at 520, 600 at the 440, and that was all in the last 20 minutes or so. So we often speak about the importance of following the late money, and it was with the winner in Super Cash. Flamberge was a drifter, 950 out to 14. Thoughts with punters that took the $14, because Flamberge looked home for a stride or two there. There was a little bit of money around for Merchant Navy as well, so I'll be fascinated to get Matt's thoughts on Merchant Navy's performance on Saturday and what we do with the runner who now heads the Newmarket betting.
What did you think of his run, Matt?
Yeah, I thought his run was everything I expected, to be honest. I think he's a horse who really is very well suited at 1,200 metres and probably 1,400 metres, and not as well suited at 1,100 metres, which we saw on Saturday. He conceded them a start off what was a very slow tempo early for this class of race. He's run the best last 800, 600 and 400 metre splits of the day. So I think Merchant Navy's done an excellent job to get as close as he did. And he looks well on track for the Newmarket in 2 weeks' time, or three weeks' time, I think it is. And I'm really excited to see this horse get to 1,400 metres in time, because I don't think he's just a sprinter. I think he's a horse with a big future. So great return from him. They did go slowly, as I said. Flamberge led them up, and Drossen sat outside Flamberge, and it was just noticeable just how relaxed Drossen was in the run. I think probably almost too relaxed. I think they might have gone a bit slowly on him. I would have loved to have seen him lead them up and sort of make them run along a little bit earlier, because as they were coming to the home bend, most of these horses were up on the bit. They were all travelling quite well, and it was just a matter of who'd had the best cover from the wind and had the sharpest sprint on them. And that was Super Cash, who'd settled in behind the speed. She did have to wait for a run at the top of the straight, but as soon as she got clear, she'd had that soft run, she'd had cover from the wind, and she was able to power over the top of them. Given how slowly they went in front, I think Flamberge has done well to hang on, given that he hasn't been able to take advantage of having that early lead, and had to work into what was a strong wind by this race. So he's done extremely well. Super Cash, as I said, this is her track. She loves it first up. She's now 4 from 5 first up. I think she loves Caulfield 1,100 metres. So good performance from her. It was noticeable that Rich Charm didn't have a lot of luck in the straight. Got shuffled back to the tail of the field as they came around the home bend. Had to duck and weave, and has done an extremely good job to run home and only be beaten a length and a half. Canny Essent covered a bit of ground, knocked up late, but was probably entitled to. I think he'll certainly improve for the run. And again, I'm keen to follow Drossen, because I don't think his early speed was used to best advantage on Saturday, and I think that run will really bring him on, because it was his first run in about 10 months. So Drossen is a horse I'm keen to follow going forward. And Prezzardo finished last. There was a lot of money for him at one point in time in betting, but was just fair in running last. Actually, quite disappointing. So good win by Super Cash, but that is really her hitting zone. First up, 1,100 metres at Caulfield. Merchant Navy and Rich Charm are certainly horses to follow from a Newmarket perspective, and I imagine they're right up there in betting, and I'll be giving Drossen another chance going forward.
We then go to the Autumn Stakes, race number 7, three-year-old Group 2 events, 1,400 metres. Another race with quite a few chances here, Nick. What were the significant movers with the tab?
Well, the best backed runner, Scarecrow, was scratched at the barriers. That's right. With $21 all the way down to 5 before getting out to 6.50, but was clearly the best backed, and obviously we'll never know what he would have done if he got his crack at them. But Holly Snow, the winner, was 17 into 15 late in betting and got the prize. There was a little bit of late money for both Lavendi and Villamont. Lavendi at the 5.50 quote, Villamont was 5 into 4. Both those two runners have been pretty popular for the Australian Guineas, Matt. So what did you make of them both?
Villamont, I thought, was very good. Was absolutely bolting on the home bend with nowhere to go. Had a full tank of fuel up and hit the line strongly. Lavendi was also good, covered a little bit of ground and okay to the line. I think these were good pipe openers for those horses. The element that was most notable here with the Autumn Stakes is it was one of the more genuinely run races of the day. Prevailing winds pushed forward from a wide draw to overcome that awkward alley and ran them along at a good speed. So that allowed horses like Holy Snow and Mr. So-and-so to run over the top of them, and they did a good job. Astoria has covered a fair bit of ground and I think was good first up for a horse that looks like he'll get up to 2,000 metres in time. He looked like he was probably going to drop out and run in the second half of the field coming around the home bend, but picked up and ran third, and I thought that was a really good effort from the Godolphin horse. And the Godolphin stable were absolutely flying on Saturday, so he's done a good job. The other one I thought worth noting was, as I said, Villamont's run well, and Black Sail did a pretty good job as well for the Purcell stable. But I'd give a bit of extra credit to Prevailing Winds here, who's run them along into a strong northerly and done a good job to hold on for fourth. Pretty strong race all in all, and I think Holy Snow was a very good winner, showed a devastating turn of foot there at the top of the straight and put them away very quickly, and was one of a number of horses to win first up on Saturday. There was a number of winners resuming, which was a notable element of the card, Nadia.
Yeah, very good point you bring up there too, Matt. We go to race number 8. This was the big one, the Group 1 1400 metre CF4 Stakes, and we ended up with Toss and Stardom starting favourite. The eventual winner, Hartnell, got out to $6 in betting. What were some of the key investments in this race, Nick?
Yeah, Toss and Stardom was clearly the best back runner, but there was a bit of money around for Hartnell, as you said, started around the $6 quote, bets of 4,000 and 3,000 late in betting. With a spirited betting race, there was a little bit of late money for a couple of runners, including Mr. Sneaky, who was $11 in to $9.50. Thronum attracted a bet of 4,500 at 10, and Mighty Boss, who looks to have come back much bigger and stronger this campaign, attracted one bet of 5,000 at 13. Overall, though, Toss and Stardom did firm throughout the course of the week, was clearly the best back runner. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be. He was a $6 chance on Monday, and he was 480 into 420 once the final field wasn't out.
How did you sort of assess the speed in this race, Matt?
Yeah, well, as soon as Lord of the Sky missed the start, Nadia, that took a lot of the speed out of the race. I'd mapped them to go pretty quickly in this race, with Lord of the Sky setting a genuine tempo when 1,100 metres up to 1,400 metres. He was in the second half of the field, and that left Thronum to sort of battle for the lead with Dollar for Dollar, and Dollar for Dollar wasn't really interested in leading. So Thronum sort of found himself in front. For this class of race and this distance, they've gone really slowly early. A number of horses have got pulling. Chahitzi, Dollar for Dollar, Lord of the Sky, who ultimately pulled his way up to a share of the lead. The favourite, Toss and Stardom, pulled its way up into third or fourth. So it was a really slowly run race. It meant as they came around the home bend, you could throw a handkerchief over the field. And that's why we've seen so many unlucky runners. There's only so many bits of turf that they can all go to, and they're all vying for different spots. And, you know, one gap was there for two horses. And it's probably easy to talk about the runners who had luck rather than those who didn't have luck, because I think almost every horse outside the winner had a degree of bad luck in the run. Hartnell, I think, has done a fantastic job to return a winner here. He's coming back from a Melbourne Cup over 3,200 metres. He's won first up at 1,400, and brilliant ride by Craig Williams, because he made the task very difficult for Damien Lane on Toss and Stardom early when he kicked up inside of that horse and made Damien work out 4 and 5 wide on Toss and Stardom. So a lot of credit goes to Craig Williams here on Hartnell for his ride. He gave the horse every chance in the run, and he was too good. Really good performance by Single Gaze back in second. She was hitting the line strongly, and 50 metres after the post, she was probably, you know, a couple of lengths in front of her rivals. She was excellent. That's a great return from the Canberra mare, and she's only going to get better as the distances get longer. Brave Smasher returned to form after a very disappointing first-up run in the Australia Stakes. He travelled quite well. He was very tractable. When Johnny Allen was forced to get him to the outside and switch off heels, he was unlucky. You could arguably say he should have won. The run of Lord of the Sky, I don't think many people have mentioned this, but it was just enormous. He was the only horse really outside of Toss and Stardom who's done any work in the run here. He once he missed the kick, he wasn't happy back there, so Damien Oliver sawed him forward, got up outside the leader. He looked like the winner still, probably at the 100-metre mark. He was right there and only tired the last 50 metres. I thought his run was just excellent. Mr. Sneaky's run very well. Even Shillelagh was finishing off late. She played up before the start. She was cantankerous going to the barriers. I thought her run was okay. Abby Marie didn't have a lot of room in the straight. So that's a thing we need to be careful of, is because they've gone so slowly, a lot of these horses have been able to be comfortable when they're coming around the home bend. They've had a full head of steam up. They've had no luck in the straight, but how, as punters, do we sort of translate into how well they would have gone? And that's the unfortunate thing when you get a slowly run race. You know, horses have bad luck, and we've got to use our imagination to work out how well they're actually going, Nadia.
Exactly, and you just have a look at the spread across the field. Like, there was only, you know, 3.5 lengths between first and last.
Yeah, exactly right, and as I said, that's just a because of the pace. It's not because of the evenness of the field, really. Chahitzi was last, beaten 3.45 lengths. So it's a bit of a conundrum going forward how we treat this form. But Mighty Boss was the other one, of course, I hadn't touched on, who didn't have a huge amount of luck in the straight and looks to have returned in very good order. But it's going to be a really tricky race to assess going forward. I think for most of these, it's virtually a barrier trial. Probably going to bring them on fitness-wise, and we almost need to treat them first up when they go into their next starts is really the way I'll probably be taking the race going forward, Nadia.
Okay. So do you put some weight on a bit of market intelligence then, if you are going to treat them as first up on the way that they were supported in that race?
Well, there's certainly been a lot of support for Tosin Stardom, both in this race and just publicly. The stable have said that he's going really well. He was the one horse who pulled up with a few issues. He had the thumps, I think a bit of heat stress as well. Now, how much that's going to take out of him at his next start is another element that we need to assess. Has this run just sort of done a lot of damage for him going forward, or will he bounce off that and be really strong second up and ultimately third up into the Australia Cup, which will no doubt be his aim, given how well he won the Emirates Stakes over 2,000 metres at Flemington on the final day of the carnival last year, Nadia?
Nick, just having a look at the futures market for the Australian Cup, of course, with Galo Shop winning and also Tosin Stardom going around and the win of Hartnell. Has there been much change in the market?
Yeah, there has been. Galo Shop's been the firm. It was $11 into $9 and subsequently been backed into $8. He's been the move for the race after the weekend. Tosin Stardom remains favourite at $5. Hartnell a $9 chance. Obviously, no certainty to go there. Humidor and Johanna Vermeer, both would be unlikely, in my opinion, there at $11. Ambitious, a $15 chance. Harlem at $15. Single Gaze, $15. Stampede had a couple of coins on Stampede. Matty Welsh, after Gay Waterhouse said would be the target this spring at the $34 quote.
Well, that's very wise punting, Nick, potentially. We'll wait and see. You're a very good futures judge.
Yeah, I just need some to win every now and again. That would be nice. Look at that Australian Cup market. For mine, I reckon there's some betting opportunities because there's so many runners at the pointy end of the market that I just don't think are going to go to the race.
What price do you say Galo Shop was?
$9 into $8 in the last 24 hours.
Probably about his right price. I think Tosin Stardom is probably a little bit under the odds. I thought, yeah, Galo Shop has had as good an Australia Cup trial as anyone coming out of Saturday's races for mine.
Very good point. Well, let's have a look at the last. This was the Mayor's Race. It was a blanket finish, and one of the outsiders won in Prussian Vixen. Was there any support at all for her longer odds, Nick?
There were some little bets late. She did get out to $51 from 26 and did start at $41. So taking a look, there was a 300 each way at the 51 and a 400 each way at 41. So that were the two bigger bets, but unfortunately, most of the money was with the heavily backed Silent Sedition, who was 310 into as low as 270 before starting at 280, and some good late bets along the way as well. So it was a pretty tough way for punters to finish the program at Caulfield.
What did you take out of this race, Matt?
Yeah, Prussian Vixen, along with Supercash, both won their respective races on this day last year. So good training performances and both on speed horses who were very good. I thought Prussian Vixen was really benefited by the fact that they ran it along this race, the last race. She does her best work off high pressure races, and we saw that again on Saturday with Foy and Rusty, who's a very fast horse, setting a genuine tempo as the fastest first 400 metres of the day. Prussian Vixen's done a very good job. I think Fragonard was slowly out and got into a far more awkward spot than she normally would, especially from that good gate. She's done a really good job here because Petition came around her coming around the home bend and just took her running, made sure she stayed in a pocket. She was forced to then hold up for a run and did a good job to finish fourth. Petition's done what Petition does, flash home into a placing. She really needs to get another win on the board, but she had trialled very well leading into this race, and I think she's going as good as the Freedmans can get her going. She just has that racing style that doesn't lend itself to winning overly often, so she needs to get another win on the board. I thought Silent Sedition was probably a touch disappointing. I know she raced in restricted room at certain times in the straight, but she had a lovely cart in behind them, protected from the wind. She was very well backed. There was a lot of support to suggest she was going well. Her trial leading in was good, and in this sort of grade, she really should have been able to put them away. So I think she needs to improve to get back up to the heights that saw her win the William Reid back in March, and I thought her run was just a touch disappointing. There's one who's finished back in the field here that I'm keen to follow in number two, Montoya's Secret. I thought she'd trialled just averagely and like she'd benefit from the run first up. That was certainly the case. She got a long way back, but her work to the line was very good. She was making late ground. Her last 200 and 400 metre splits were very good. So she's a horse who's going to get to 1400 and 1600 metres in the coming weeks. And I've made her one of the horses to follow in spite of finishing fourth last. So I was taken there with Montoya's Secret for Leon and Troy Corstens, Nadia.